Good afternoon, everybody. We call this one Money Makes the Ball Go Round. We know of certain ways of making that true, but one of them is certainly transfers. And to talk about transfers, how it works, what's behind it, what are the forces that make the transfers to go one way or the other, what are the trends in terms of transfers in the biggest European leagues, we've got the perfect people to talk about this. Starting with Esteve Calzada, who's the former CMO of Football Club Barcelona, advisor of top European clubs, the author as well of a book I recommend if you're interested about marketing and how you generate revenue for clubs, called Show Me the Money, which is translated to 6 languages. And he would be, once I finish this, the one who would give you a presentation on how he sees the transfers trends taking place in the last few months. Next to him, we've got Ramon Loarte, who is the director of marketing of Sevilla Football Club, has been for 2.5 years. Sevilla, as you know, in terms of transfers, is a little bit of a miracle. We want to know if he can share the content of that miracle. He was, of course, before worked for Telefonica, Deutsche Telekom, and publicity agencies and digital media like WPP. And next to him is Daniel Lorenz. Lorenz, did I say that right? So he's now of Lawrence Consultancy, but of course worked at Porto as legal director and international director for 16 years, which means that he was involved in a lot of the transfers that have taken place at Porto, which again is one of the miracles of football. You tend to get players very cheaply and you sell them very expensively. How do you do that? But don't tell us just yet. So let's start with Esteve, please. I'll hand you over to Mr. Calzada.
I think this is the one. Okay, good. So, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for making your time this late. I know it's been a very long day of conferences. I hope you guys took good advantage of the day. It's always a pleasure to be in here and to meet some usual people. And for us, it's great because we have the opportunity. It's a perfect timing because it's just when we release our SoccerX transfer review report, which we've been doing at Primetime Sport since 2009, and it's normally right after the summer transfer window. Some of the things that you will see are things that you will have read in the media already. But basically what I want to do is to take you through the main conclusions of what we've seen in the transfer market window this summer. There's plenty of interesting things for us to discuss together. So I'll just take the word, go through that, and then obviously we'll have an open conversation. So transfer review, SoccerX transfer review, as I said, we've been doing it twice a year since 2009, summer transfer window, winter transfer window. And what we do is we review the transfer activity, the player transfer activity across the top five European leagues. And obviously when we've done it for so many years, it's good because we can have a very nice perspective. And as you will see with the numbers, we're lucky to be all together involved in such a dynamic industry, and this year in particular, we have seen a number of events and circumstances that made this transfer window a very special one, a very unique one. And I would highlight two of these circumstances. The first one is the new TV deals cracking in this year at the Premier League. We are talking about a combined revenue for the league over the next 3 years of £8.3 billion. This is more than 50% above the previous deals. And this is something that, as you will see in the numbers, has definitely affected positively the purchasing power of the English Premier League clubs. Not only this year, but even the previous year when these deals were announced, even if they still would not be in place. So that's one circumstance that has impacted dramatically the market this summer. The other circumstance, I would find it at La Liga. So La Liga, we've been seeing year after year, the fact that it was a duo competition, Barcelona versus Real Madrid, and then everyone else. There's been a turning point at La Liga since the current regime driving and managing the tournament have managed to go through a low, which meant the end of the individual sales of the TV rights, in a way that now the sale is collective, and it's much more spread. So La Liga went from, you know, seeing Barcelona and Real Madrid at 140 million euro each in revenues from TV rights per year, compared to, you know, the Eibars or the Alaves or this type of club, Granadas of the world. This world are around 10, 15 million euros. So it's sometimes 12, 13 times from the one making the most to the one making the least. We've seen a big turnaround here because the new system, the new regime, the new way of both selling the rights and, more importantly, distributing the rights means that Barcelona and Real Madrid have accepted to stay in similar numbers so that the increase in value of La Liga went spread into the other teams, which means that effectively, for the first time, we've seen the small teams having a purchase power to buy players that we've never seen before. So these are the two circumstances that have clearly affected the market. The market, as you know, has been awesome and whopping numbers. You know, we're talking about here 3.3 billion euros in transfer expenditure. That's 9% above a year ago, and it would be even more if we wouldn't have seen the impact of the devaluation of the British sterling. And if we look at this per league, it's no surprise that the Premier League is more than ever the driving force of European football. What happens in the Premier League impacts dramatically the other leagues. And some of them, like the French one, have become, you know, a product suppliers or have become player suppliers for this very strong league. So, basically, 1.4 billion euros, record high in history, just like last year we saw record high in history too. And then followed by the Italian Serie A. We've been seeing a lot of activity at Italian Serie A, but as you'll see later, this is something that has been dictated and driven by the fact that there's been a lot of sales, player sales, and that has been reinvested in new players. So the order this year in terms of amount spent, Premier League, different animal, and then Serie A, Bundesliga, La Liga, and League One. So that's in terms of amount spent. If we go deeper and we look at the, you know, second tier division in the different leagues, we can see also another piece of information, a piece of news, which makes England even more different than the other countries. And when we see that Championship in the EFL has spent almost 250 million euros in new players, and we compare with the other leagues, I mean, there's just no comparison. This is driven by the fact that we've got, you know, this year we've got at the Championship teams like Aston Villa, Newcastle, teams that are traditionally at the Premier League, and they have parachute payments, they have available income to invest, and basically they want to invest very hard, not only those teams, but any teams in the competition, just to basically promote and have access to the big money that participating in the Premier League brings along. In terms of player sales, and this is also very important because we like, as you know, to talk about net spenditure, which is basically what you spend in new players after deducting what you have cashed in terms of player sales. So that's what I was mentioning before. Italian Serie A, driven by many transactions, mainly obviously, you know, the Pogba sale from Juventus to Manchester United, Higuain being sold from Napoli to Juventus. So the numbers from the Italian Serie A are mainly driven by high amount of sales that have been then reinvested into player acquisition. So all in all, when we made the net calculation, the dominance of the Premier League is even more dramatic, you know, and we 790 million euros net investment, which compares to Bundesliga 84 million euros. So big dominance by the Premier League. We've seen it year after year, and this year in particular, for a combination of factors. On one side, obviously, new money coming in from the TV rights, but then also the fact that some of the big teams are coming from a bad season. Manchester City, new project, new manager, Manchester United the same, Chelsea the same. So all the big teams have been in bad need to improve pitch results and have spent big time. In terms of the big spenders, we are in the city that has spent the most this summer, so both Manchester teams have spent more than any other teams in Europe. Manchester United has spent 185 million euros, followed by Manchester City with 174 million euros. Then other team, Juventus, also because they've been reinvesting some of the money that they've made. All in all, 5 in 10 teams in the top 10 in the Premier League. So again, big dominance from the Premier League. Three of the teams that have spent most this summer have joined the historical top 10 of maximum expenditure in a summer transfer window, which is still led by what Real Madrid invested in the season 09-10, where they invested almost 300 million euros. In terms of player sales, we've got some usual suspects in here. Starting with Juventus selling for 159 million euros, Valencia 113 million euros, Dortmund very intensive activity, and then some of the teams that we are used to see in this top 10. Sevilla, will have the opportunity to comment with Ramon, still in the top 10 every year, selling big amount in new players and bringing in new players and repeating it again the following year. Very, very, very impressive. Even Liverpool has now been featuring among those clubs that are selling and making a lot of money in player sales. Liverpool has sold over the last 3 years for 274 million euros. So big amount. And then if we put together the amount of activity including both sales and expenditure, Juventus is probably definitely the team of the summer in terms of the activity. It has definitely been very busy at the Juventus Stadium with all the players leaving, all the players coming. Big amount of money, transactions in total for more than 300 million euros. The names we're all very familiar with, the highest transfer in history, Pogba moving to Manchester United, going back to Manchester United, Higuain, whopping 90 million euros, and then many other players. Surprisingly, we haven't seen Real Madrid doing any big transaction this summer, and this is not pretty much the usual thing. So two of these, the top two transfers of this summer, Pogba and Higuain, joined the historical top 10 of most expensive transfers ever. Another interesting development that we've seen, and obviously we'll have the time to talk about Sam Allardyce, he's in the news today, as we all know, for non-football reasons, if we can call it like this. But something that we have started to track, because we're seeing it more and more, is when teams have to pay a fee to count on a new manager. So Everton has paid a lot of money to Southampton, just like the FA has paid a lot of money to Sunderland to be able to land Sam Allardyce as the England manager. So we've been tracking this activity, and more and more it's happening that not just the players but the managers have become also a kind of trading good in the industry, which makes it very, very interesting. I don't want to go into too much detail, but I have some details to share about both La Liga and Premier League. Soccer Transfer Review is always going out with two different editions, La Liga and Premier League edition. And I just want to share a couple of circumstances or news about both La Liga and Premier League, which will help us to have a discussion afterwards. The news at La Liga is this kind of new democracy that I was talking about. More income going into the smaller teams, which means that when we started doing our report, only 20% of the transfer activity would be made by teams other than Real Madrid or Barcelona, only 20%. This summer, two-thirds of this activity has been done for teams other than Barcelona and Real Madrid, which is precisely one of the objectives of La Liga by centralizing the rights. Also very interesting, it's very small in here, but I just want you to keep some numbers in mind. Six teams at La Liga have managed to spend 30 million euros or more in new players. This is something that never happened before. 10 teams investing more than 10 million in La Liga. Again, something very usual, as we'll see in a second, in the Premier League, but not that much in La Liga. So as a result, we've seen, you know, never before we've seen this amount of expenditure. You know, 2 years ago, only four teams spent more than 30 million euros, only seven teams spent more than 10 million euros, only seven teams spent more than 5 million. Just like this summer, we've seen 15 teams spending more than 5 million, or only four, being able to spend 2 million or less. So, a turning point in La Liga, plenty of information that goes in this direction. The bottom 10 of teams investing has basically, this summer, has invested for 43 million euros. This is 2.5 times the amount that we saw the last year. And if we take the top four teams investing, again, we're moving from almost 90% 2 years ago into 66.3%. So this is a big change at La Liga. This is something that we'll be able to discuss at the panel and obviously take questions from you guys. But one of the objectives that La Liga has with this new system is to have a more even competition, to have more less predictable results. And it seems to be working, because when we look at the first six match days in La Liga, we realize that Barcelona and Real Madrid have dropped more points than ever before. I read the other day that since is the year in which the leaders have collected less points for the last kind of 10 years. So it seems to be working. So and actually, you could expect Barcelona and Real Madrid to drop more points than ever before and to lose more often. Probably you will still see them winning the tournaments, but I'm quite certain that we will see them losing more matches than ever before. Probably not at the level of competition that we see here in the Premier League, but definitely becoming a much more attractive proposition. Then some data and facts about the Premier League that can help also our panel discussion. The trend, it's unbelievable the way it's been growing. Record high investment year after year, as we commented before. All the teams have spent 30 million or more, which is unbelievable amount. And more importantly, 13 out of 20 teams have made this summer their record high signing ever in their history. So plenty of different activity. What we also see is the fact that if we look at the top 10 most expensive players of the summer, only one striker features in the top 10, Batshuayi, that has been brought by Chelsea from Olympique Marseille. Four centre-backs are in the top 10 in England. So centre-backs have become very precious trading goods in the industry. And it's interesting to consider this disinformation for us to discuss. But then you need to ask yourself, when you see this amount of money being spent, is like, is it money that is properly spent? Is it paying off? You know, because sometimes you feel like, even as fans, we may ask ourselves that we don't understand some of the signings. Here are some numbers that can bring food for thought to all of us, right? On one side, we see that over the last 4 years, there's been 124 players that have been bought by Premier League teams for 10 million euros or more. Okay, out of these 124 players, only 42% of them have played more than 50% of the minutes, which means that almost 1 billion investment has gone to players that either are not regulars in their team or have even left their teams. Because if we go deeper, we'll see that only 34 of these 124 players, so 27% of these players, are still in their clubs right now, since they came to their team. So that means that 600 million worth of players, we could consider that they would not work, right? And then every case is a different one. But at the end of the day, the number is that 20%, 22% of the investment that the Premier League has done in new players, it's been done in players that are no longer in the team that they brought them in. So again, some more information, some more food for thought. Some of the names here, obviously Di Maria was only 1 year at United, Benteke, who is doing, by the way, quite well at Crystal Palace, etc., etc. Finally, another interesting question or debate, and it's still probably too early to say, and we'll have also the opportunity to discuss later on, is Brexit going to affect the way the market works, the way the Premier League teams invest in new players? If we look at this summer, the answer is it looks like it's not going to be the case, okay, because English teams have spent or have invested in foreign players more than ever before. And out of these 1.2 billion players that have been bought by English Premier League clubs, most of them are players that are currently in kind of European passport holders. And depending on what the ultimate regulation is, they may not be eligible for Premier League teams in the future. We'll see. So, just again, some final conclusions here. As I said before, Liverpool and Southampton have become regulars in terms of selling players, and Liverpool is doing quite well, by the way. But this is something that we've been seeing since we've been doing the report, especially since the implementation of financial fair play. The trading of players has become a standard practice, not only in the Sevillas, Southamptons, Benficas, or this type of teams, but also in the top teams, just like Liverpool is. So these are the numbers that I wanted to share with you. This is something that we will now be able to discuss more in detail. And I'll just finish my presentation with kind of four open questions for us to discuss together. First one, an obvious one, is there a limit? What is the roof? What will happen next year? Will we see English Premier League investing more and more again? Is it going to flatten? What's going to happen? How are the other leagues going to compete with this? How La Liga, La Bundesliga, Serie A will manage to retain talent and compete effectively with the English Premier League? Is Brexit, when it officially going ahead, is it going to affect the way the European market works, especially with the dominance of the Premier League? And then another interesting thought for us to discuss, based on what I was commenting before on, is like, are we going to see regularly or soon a team or a side which is not Real Madrid or Barcelona winning the Premier League? sorry, not the Premier League, that's not going to happen. But is it going to happen that a team which is not Real Madrid or Barcelona wins La Liga? Who knows? We've seen it with Atletico recently, and maybe with a new distribution, it may happen more often. Let's see. So this is just some open questions that we can just now discuss together. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Esteban. Thank you very much for making my life very easy. So, first question. That is a fascinating one. Can the Premier League keep growing? And is there a limit to that? Are we about to see the first £200 million player, for instance?
I don't think we're about to see it. And I would expect the next summer to be more quiet. Not quiet, but more quiet, because there's no expectation of a big circumstance happening. And the new TV rights contracts have been already factored in for 2 years. So next year, the clubs will make more or less the same. So I would expect the situation to calm down a little bit, at least next summer.
From Sevilla's point of view, and we're going to talk about the miracle of Sevilla in a little while, but first of all, do you have mixed feelings about how rich the Premier League is? Because, of course, it provides a lot of money to you, but at the same time, you cannot compete in the transfer market with them. Is it mixed feelings towards the Premier League?
Yeah, it is. You're right. Well, according to our strategy, we decided 10 years, 12 years ago, what would be the options that for Sevilla FC to start competing again in the top level of La Liga and also in European competitions. And of course, we know what kind of values we can offer, and it's a tricky strategy, as probably the best players that have been played in Sevilla FC for one season or two seasons, we know that they will end up playing in a different club, either in La Liga or in the Premier League, as we could see, because they can't afford it.
So the secret is how to bridge that gap, how to make it shorter. And in a way, Porto was another miracle, because you managed to do very well with the finances that you had and compete in the sporting arena. But that model that you were involved with, does it still work? Could it still work?
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for the question. I mean, I think it still can work. And despite the not successful three last years, but you know, we have. I think it's not a magic recipe, but it results from many factors put together. It's first of all, it's a lot of good competence of the board, and it results from factors combined that I would say result from a very good designed decision-making process of the board. You have in transfers to decide very fast between the president and maybe the sporting director. Maybe don't have a veto from the coach, but you have to have a shadow team, maybe two shadow teams. You have to have all the connections with the right agents, the right scoutings. And if you are aggressive and you know your business, then you'll be able to, sometimes, of course, it's inevitable that you go wrong, but you can. And Porto not only could, it needed decisively because of the lack of revenues. Unlike the British market, the best revenues for Porto emerged and derived from the transfers of players. For instance, FC Porto just, I think last year, from the TV rights earned per year, the broadcast rights, about 16 to 17 million euros per year. And you saw that Arsenal last year had 101 million pounds, not euros, pounds. So it's a huge, huge difference. And in order to compete in same competition like the Champions League, and I mean, you don't have the lack of respect wanting to win it, but you want to reach the quarterfinals, you want to make good games, you want to have your players in the window, try to sell them. You need to work a lot behind the scenes in order to make it happen. I think I don't want it to be too long, but despite the third-party ownership ban, I think Porto not so not it cannot maximize as he used to do with all this tool, but it still can do it, of course, yeah.
Sevilla certainly managed to do it for a long while. Every year, 10, 12 players go. Every year, 12, 12 players come, and you're making profit. So, come on, tell us how you do that.
Thanks God, not me. I'm not responsible for that area, but it's kind of a miracle. People and the club works really hard in order to make this proposal internally sustainable in a long-term period. It works for us for 10 years, and it's pretty much it's the work for many people, scouting, everything getting ready just in case that, for instance, Ever Banega goes to the Italian League. So, especially this year, as the manager, the coach, Unai Emery, went to the PSG, and we hired Jorge Sampaoli, which has an absolutely different way of playing. Strategy, everything is absolutely different from Unai Emery. So, we had, and as we've seen on the presentation, we had to invest a lot, probably top investment in history for Sevilla FC, taking part of this group of 88% of investment this year because due to two reasons. The first, because of the change of the manager, Jorge Sampaoli, his style, his way of playing, totally different. And also because we need different players, more attractive, in a different way, more technically, in order to compete with at least a minimum of warranty of success now that we are competing again in Champions League. As you all know, we've been very successful in UEFA Europa League. It's a tournament that we love it. Kind of miracle because they're being a
little... You own the tournament.
Well, no, with a lot of moments of luckiness. We've been very lucky in few moments that it comes to my mind. Goalkeeper making a goal in the semi-final. A lot of moments, special moments that drove us to the end in order to reach again the trophy. But we would like or we wanted as a club to compete aggressively in Champions League this year. So that's probably the reason that we invest probably the most in history in this season.
Esteban, we were so happy in Spain, weren't we, that we finally got a television right that gave us a lot of money, or the clubs a lot of money, and all of a sudden the Premier League goes and gets a deal for 7 billion euros, and it's like, oh, we were getting there, but we can't get there. Or can we? What's how do you foresee what's coming?
Well, I think if you talk to La Liga top management, you know, overtaking or getting closer to the Premier League is one of the aspirations, and the distance now is so big that probably it would be more of a reasonable objective to become a solid number two, because Bundesliga is getting stronger, good TV rights in there, Serie A starting with new stadiums, new projects, new owners. So at the end of the day, you want a competition which is successful, which brings fans in, you know, competitive games, try to improve the deal, the TV rights. I mean, we've been seeing La Liga going from around 700 million euros in total in TV revenues into this year. It's going to be around 1.7 billion euros. And we are hearing that the next three-year cycle is going to be 3 billion, which is amazing. But still, when you look at the guys from here, it's just huge. So probably it's more reasonable to say, like, I want to be a strong number two and continue to grow, and then see if there's a gap to get closer to the Premier League, and probably then capitalizing on one strength that Premier League could not yet kind of quite get there, which is the results on the pitch, especially outside the Premier League. So the big challenge here is how English teams do better in the Champions League, how do they better in the Europa League, how the England national team does better in the national, in the international competitions. Because here is definitely where La Liga is the strongest competition.
Because you know about everything, not just transfers. I'm going to ask you something that is interesting to David Garrido, who's over there, myself, because we do Spanish football on Sky, and more big games are put at 3 o'clock UK time on a Saturday when you cannot broadcast them. Is that part of what you were talking about, of challenging the Premier League? Is that why it's happening? Does anybody know? We need to know. Because the Clásico, perhaps, will be put at that time. At a time that cannot be broadcasted live in the UK. Is that part of the strategy to challenge the Premier League?
I don't think that's the case. And actually, the 5 o'clock kickoff time has been moved to 5:15. And sorry, let me just make the right calculation. No, the 6 o'clock, exactly 6 o'clock kickoff time in Spain is now 6:15, which is 5:15 in here. So just so that basically you have the 3 to 5 block, so that game is not affected by that restriction in here. So I was with President Tebas when we presented the report in Spain a couple of weeks ago, and he was asked because it was the first Saturday morning or lunchtime game in La Liga. It was Celta playing Atletico Madrid, right when the Manchester derby was taking place. Probably the most attractive Manchester derby in years. And it was interesting to see how bravely Tebas was saying, we'll get more audience than the derby. Because in some places, especially in China, La Liga has a free-to-air agreements on TV as opposed to pay TV, which multiplies the numbers, right? I don't think that's an objective to clash specifically on that time. One big difference in Spain, of course, is the fact that there's so many different kickoff times, as opposed to a tradition that you have here, which is Saturday 3 p.m. It's different models, and it's obvious that the model here works very well.
One of the interesting things to come out from that transfer review is that all of a sudden is the top side in the table has lost more points than since 2003, mm-hmm. was it? So we are talking about something perhaps new or recently hasn't happened so often, where teams were taking points of other teams, top teams. Do you think that's a trend? Is it an accident what's happening, or is it a trend? You're going to be more able to compete against Atletico Madrid, Barcelona, Real Madrid?
Well, we hope that it could be a trend that we are reaching season by season a top level and try to compete against Real Madrid, Barcelona, and Atletico Madrid for sure, and try to get this fourth place that would enable us to compete in Champions League next season, and also to, why not? And Esteve has recently mentioned, why not compete in order to get the La Liga trophy now. For sure, those clubs who have spent more money into good players, and it has nothing related to good player, but the very good performance player. It was £600 million, you know, staying there, waiting to their best moment in terms of performance. But for sure, I mean, if we receive more money coming from the TV rights, if we receive more money coming from the marketing source of revenue and also transferring players, we will start competing better and better.
So we're going to see another champion in Spain apart from Madrid or Barcelona. Is that what you're saying? Or are they getting too rich for everybody else?
They are. They are getting too rich. But as we could see, at least at the beginning of this La Liga, this season, few points have been dropped off mm-hmm. from the competition, so who knows? It's a really long run, so it could be very difficult for at least a club for us, for our club, to reach the first position, but we can have the chance. We had the chance in the before, it was eight seasons ago, and until the last match day, we had the chance to win the La Liga.
So we've seen what the transfer window is doing to the clubs. They're making a lot of money. Some of them, if you do it cleverly, like Sevilla, a lot of money that allows you to keep competing. But you were telling me earlier that FIFA Pro is actually challenging how the transfer system, just like that, that they did that a year ago, but nothing is happening, or is it happening? Why are they challenging it?
Yeah, can you just allow me just to make a small remark regarding the presentation? I mean, I'm worried as a former FC Porto employee and fan, what you were saying, that the gap between the richest clubs and the so-called medium clubs like Porto, Ajax, or Atletico Madrid, the traditional ones, Atletico Madrid is now moving up, it's getting really, the gap is getting bigger. And, you know, everything has an explanation. It's not only about the success. If you look at the British, they are on the top. But they had here many factors as well. For instance, the club ownership. You see many clubs here that were not so famous some years ago. Take Manchester City, take even Chelsea, and take others. Now they're pumped full of money, of outside money, and they are now top clubs like the traditional ones, like Manchester United or Arsenal. And you have a very competitive league, so competitive now that even the Germans and the Spanish were afraid that they couldn't compete in the European competitions with the English teams. So now you saw even some concern to change the format, at least the access list in the new cycle of the European competitions, 18-21. And you'll have now, you were talking about the times, you will have now in the same day matches at 7 and matches at 9 o'clock, and a huge increase of revenue. Before that, you have the financial fair play, which also influenced the transfer fees and some reduction of it. So, and you had also the tool of TPO that was abolished. So you have there many, many factors involving which influenced the transfer fees. But it was not by accident that the highest transfer fee was here in England with Manchester United hiring Pogba. They completely dominated. And the Germans and the Spanish, they were quite quiet in this transfer market. One could argue maybe because they had two Spanish teams deciding which one is the Champions League winner, but I don't think so. You want every year, you want to be more competitive, you want to renew. So there are some factors behind it that will explain also these figures that Steve showed here in the slides. Just going back now to the question, sorry. Yes, it's the FIFA Pro, and it's now 1 year that it was all over the news, September 2015, that FIFA Pro announced big to file a complaint with the directorate of the European the competition of the European Commission, and to challenge the actual transfer system. They want to abolish the transfer fees. And I think that this is something I don't understand so much the rationale behind it. They argue it's the free movement of players, but of course you have to look also into the contractual stability, and more important, to the integrity and to the stability of the competitions. But even if for theoretical reasons one can concede that this may happen, I think it would only help the big clubs, the richest clubs, because they play the highest, they pay the highest wages, and they have the more attractive championships as well. The other ones would not be compensated for releasing their players. But it's, for me, surprisingly, it's been a year now, exactly 1 year, and it's like a taboo. We haven't heard anything about it. And it's an interesting topic. What has the European Commission doing about it? How have organizations like FIFA, UEFA, even the ECA, I mean, the ECA is not so, it's laterally, but not directly a member of this war, but it would be interesting to know.
Now, I want to ask you one last question before we open to questions on the floor. And we've all heard the story of published investigation in The Telegraph about Sam Allardyce. If nothing else, one of the things to come out of it is that the England national coach is saying, there are rules, but forget the rules. There are ways of doing things without the rules. If nothing else, that's what's come out from it. And for people that are involved in transfers or advising clubs or clubs yourselves, what does that make you feel when you hear somebody of that caliber talking like that?
That's a difficult one. I would say that probably many people think like him. It's just not right that it's him saying that and that being made public. At the end of the day, my opinion is I'm not against third-party ownership. And at the end of the day, if you put together the right rules, there's nothing wrong by a team getting help of a third party to fund a player transfer. And then this third party, just like you would do with a bank, has a return on the investment. So we all think that the system will look for alternative ways to kind of go around the restrictions. Probably then you would say, I mean, is it moral that the England manager is talking about that? And it's not for me to comment on that, probably.
from Europe, what does that make you feel?
I saw yesterday the news, and what it was important for me, from what I heard, I saw the video as well, it was that, okay, it was possible to circumvent the actual FIFA rules that deal with third-party ownership. And this is not something specific from that conversation or from England. Football is now universal, transversal. You do international transfers from China to Portugal, everywhere. And this is not for the people who work and with these issues in football. That's not, unfortunately, something new. Everybody is still doing third-party ownership. When I mean everybody's, maybe it's not everybody, but it's you see it a little bit everywhere. And it's sad, because the conclusion that I can draw from it is that FIFA handle it very badly when it approached this issue, because it had a very good chance to meet with all the stakeholders and to regulate it. And they preferred to outright ban it, just absolutely ban it. What happened right after they ban it is they ban it so hard in the drafting that they even left the players out of the transfer fees. Even the player is not allowed anymore to profit from its own transfer, which is a little bit ridiculous in my point of view. So after the, for instance, just to give you a very little example, after a month maybe after the transfer, this new regulations went to force, I had a player, which is Jackson Martinez, and I needed to still pay the installments of the transfer fee, I needed to a loan of a bank loan, and I needed to assign the credit rights from a future transfer to the player, to the bank, to secure this loan. And I wrote to FIFA, and I knew that from the drafting, it was impossible that I would be allowed to assign the future monies, revenues, from the player's transfer to the bank. But I received a reply that FIFA thought that without prejudice of blah, 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 what the competent authorities and dealing with a potential dispute, they thought it was within the spirit, not within the spirit of banning it, so they allowed it. They said, okay, go on with it. And then I also heard that many associations received FIFA letters informing those associations about interpretations, about the regulations, which were far beyond what the literal interpretation permitted. So that showed that they were badly drafted. It showed also that they didn't contemplate many circumstances and situations that one who deals with football transfers knows it. So instead of regulating it and controlling it, now we have shadow businesses and people making drafting confidential agreements that can come out, like the one of the Doyen and 20, or they don't come out and nobody will ever know about it, and clubs will not suffer disciplinary sanctions. But it still goes on. it's on the dark side of the road instead of being in a illuminated avenue controlled with a TMS. Everybody, also the parties, being secured because they know they can do it. They know, I mean, all the factors that were criticized, like disclosure and transparency, they could be done. But FIFA choose another path.
Yeah. Interesting point. So, anybody has got a question for any of our panelists at the back? Thank you.
Hi, Tarek Panji from Bloomberg. Just on Guillaume's point just now, you guys have all been in the game for some time. I was speaking to someone from one of the governing bodies, and this idea of kickbacks in the football industry, you know, in the sporting director model, there is some suggestion that the fiduciary duty of the sporting director or whoever's dealing with the transfer should be with the club, but given the amount of money in the game today, sometimes they aren't making the decisions for the club. And secondly, to the point on TPO, do you think the ban came in because the sort of big players in the industry were in the shadows? You know, BVI companies behind letterboxes, etc. You know, FIFA is a governing body. They're not the FSA, a financial, you know, standards agency. Trying to chase these guys is almost an impossible job. What did you expect them to do? Thanks.
It's probably more for him. No?
Well, regarding the TPO questions, I mean, what you are saying that they cannot control everything, that goes for all the football issues, even the sponsorship. I mean, if you go to the matter of principles, then you can't have maybe a club who is majorly sponsored. Also, all the money that the club earns, like, for instance, Zenit St. Petersburg is from Gazprom. And then you have Gazprom being the major sponsorship of Champions League. Then you have also their conflicts, or Schalke 04. I mean, it goes on and goes on. And you can also talk about the loans of players. If you loan a player and he's playing the final for the other team, will he play, will he not play? I mean, it goes ad infinitum. What you could do is to look at the rules that rule civilized Western countries, like the freedom of contract, the freedom of capital, many rules. And you see what is important for the integrity of the competitions, like to disclose the amounts, who are the investors. I mean, the Premier League does it very well. I did a transfer for Manchester City of the player Mangala 3 years ago, I think so. And they took a lot of time, and we had to disclose which were the third-party owners of the economic rights of the player, and they have to disclose this. I think it was very positive, and I think that the Premier League is one of the model leagues in approaching this. Also, I heard that the club ownership, they must undergo a scrutiny of a procedure where the money comes from. And I think that's important. FIFA also tackled this problem with a TMS. Very, very important. And these things can be developed, can be between everybody, can be enhanced and bettered. One thing is, maybe for political reasons, I don't know, it was Platini who had this flag and wanted to outright ban it. Many, many of the South American countries, even here European countries, they did it. They didn't want, everybody agreed in regulating it, but I think the majority didn't agree to absolutely ban it. Even a transition period was not taken in place. What they call a transition period was not a transition period. I was in the working group with FIFA when drafting these regulations. And I asked at that time for a transition period of 1 year, because we were like in December, and we're in the middle of a season, already preparing the next season. And even the members of that working group who agreed that it should be absolutely banned were sensitive and said, okay, a transitional period would be in order. And it was voted. And a one-year transition period was approved, and then it was just swept under the carpet. And it two months later, it was not in the minutes of the meeting, and it was just as this meeting never took place. Maybe this meeting was there just to legitimate, and somebody could say that the stakeholders discuss it. It was not discussed. It was pre-discussed by someone else. And these are the kinds of decisions that need to be discussed and dealt with by all stakeholders. And this kind of this culture of inviting someone to the table to discussing an issue and then already pre-deciding it and then just giving them maybe some gifts and some tickets for the matches and how good for you to come to this meeting. I mean, this kind of culture, you know, all know about it. This has to end. And sorry, I don't think that I'm disclosing anything forbidden here, but this is the modus operandi and the normal modus operandi of many of the decisions that are taken.
More questions? Up front here, David.
Question for Ramon. Hello, my name is David. I work with Guillaume on Spanish football on Sky. I'm interested to find out, what is the plan for Sevilla? How much have you started to think about life after Monchi? Is there a mini Monchi? Is there a Monchi Mark II? And are you thinking of changing your model in any way as regards how you recruit players? Thank you.
Well, thanks for your question. I wish I could have a positive answer by saying that there are more than one Monchi living with us and working with us. As you said, Monchi is one of our assets. It's probably very well known, probably one of the best sport directors ever in football. It's my personal opinion. I'm a Sevilla fan as well, but I do really think that he's really probably half 50% or even more of Sevilla FC nowadays. The success of Sevilla, I must say that there's a big team working with him, but he's the head of. He's very, very important for us, and we hope we could have him for the rest of his life, for sure.
Last question, anybody? Here at the front. One more. And then BS.
Wow.
Long run. Nice run.
Hello. I know that Daniel took part, participated in the transfer of Hulk to China, but I would like to hear from you, all of you, if you can, something about the perspectives of the China market, not only in terms of money, but also in the development of or keeping the technical performance of a huge player when he decides to go to China.
Anybody?
Yeah, let's see what happens. We didn't focus on China in this transfer report because we do it in winter, which is the biggest activity in China. Last summer, it was awesome. It was spectacular, the amount that was spent. And obviously, it's the talk in the industry. And especially when you see that they bring along not only the players that are about to retire, like, you know, go there for the end of their careers, but players like Pele, you know, recently from Southampton, and players that are that, you know, at the best times in their career. It's obvious that there's a big investment and a big commitment into football starting right from the government. And what I always say about this is that these signings are not supported by the normal P&L of a club, definitely not. So the clubs at the moment, I mean, a club regenerating 15, 20, 25 million euros in revenues cannot afford a player that is worth 60 million, 50 million, 40 million in transfer. It's just absolutely impossible. So there's other elements in the equation here, and it has to do with politics, it has to do with companies being funded by the owners or the sponsor in the shirt is the actual company of the owner. And my question is, or my what I always say is, like, I have my reasonable doubts that this will be something sustainable going forward in terms of sustainable competition, being able to steal players from Europe at their best time. What one different thing is the other way around. You know, we've seen more and more clubs being acquired by Chinese organizations, right? And that does not seem to be stopping. I think it's quite early to say, and but it's happening. There's been a lot of deals taking place involving Chinese club acquisitions, player acquisitions, sponsorship deals. And we as marketeers, we are business people in the industry, can just not ignore that. It's just that also it's, in my opinion, is a difficult place to do business if you don't have the right partners. And Daniel was commenting about this deal, and obviously, I mean, if you are helping a player and you get this money on the table and the player is prepared to go, I mean, it's happening and we're seeing it. That's true.
All right, we'll leave it here. Thank you very much to our panelists. Thank you very much for your attendance. Thank you.